are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
We are all tied up at two games apiece after an all-time block, an all-time finals block by Giannis Antetokounmpo and a resilient win by the Milwaukee Bucks, a final score of 109-103 against the Phoenix Suns. What's up and welcome to another Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. I am Jackson Gatlin, host of Locked On Rockets. He is Matt Moore, senior NBA writer at the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. And we are here to break down an insane game four. Matt, what just happened?
Just insane. I mean, it was a close game throughout. Like, it really felt like the Suns kept kind of kicking them off the ladder and kicking them off the ladder, but the Bucks hung. When the Suns got it to 9 in the fourth, I was like, that's probably it. Like, I just don't think that you can really get there. This game was tied 11 times, 9 lead changes. The Bucks would just kind of they would claw back into it, and the Suns would kick him off with some tough shots, and the Bucks would claw back into it and kick him off with some tough shots, and in the end, the Bucks, who shot 40% from the field, 24% from three, had Drew Holiday go 4 of 20, Giannis only scored 26, and they get the win. I mean, gutted it out.
Defense wins championships.
I mean, I can't disagree on that point. I mean, look, a big part of this is the rebounding. Like, a big part of this is the rebounding. Like, again, you know, the Bucks got 48 points in the paint. That's less than they had in game three. Suns got 40, but not quite enough. You know, Bucks had 19 second chance points.
We're going to get into the nitty gritty of this because this was just an incredible game from the jump. I mean, so many great storylines in this game, so many different things that we're going to tackle, but we got to let you know, today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. It's only worth it if you enjoy it, and damn, did we enjoy this game. Stay tuned for our Michelob Ultra moment coming up later in the episode. Now, Matt, I mean, where do we start first with this one? I mean, you're right. So, I mean, it was, you know,
the block.
We got to start with the block.
Something to keep in mind is that on those kind of passes where you're in drop coverage and you have to show up versus the shooter to try and deter him from shooting, the hardest thing is to make that rotation.
The recovery, right?
Is to make it back and block that lob. That's why so often teams will have their guys crash in from the corners so that guy in that coverage, the drop screener, doesn't have to make that rotation because it's impossible. How are you going to do it, especially against a guy as athletic as Ayton? Giannis, to turn on that hip and explode off of it, to cover that distance, to get the hand up with that gigantic pterodactyl arm of his and block DeAndre Ayton. In a piece I wrote for Action Network this week, I called Giannis the Kraken. That's what it felt like. Just a sea monster, giant tentacle flying out of the water and swatting that ball away. That was one of the best defensive plays I have ever seen in any game ever.
Truly living up to his Greek freak nickname, although I love the Kraken. I don't know how we got to get that to Bucks PR or something and just let them know that we got to run with this because I love that. I mean, in that moment, right, that was kind of just – That's the defining moment from this game. And we're going to look back, depending on the outcome of the series, you know, if the Bucks come away champions from this series, that is going to be in Giannis's highlight reel for the remainder of his career. You know, that is a career defining, a finals saving block from Giannis, right?
Yeah. I mean, that is the one that's going to be, if they win the title, and probably even if they don't, if they win the title, that's going to be the one that plays at his Hall of Fame ceremony. Like, that will be like the lead highlight on any Giannis package from now until the end of time. Like, that is the one because of how monstrous it was.
Before you get to your question, I think your timeline just did it so much justice, right? We need a phantom cam for that block. What else? Like, I want a 30 for 30 on that block. I want the Athletic to do an oral history on that block. I want Vince Gilligan to produce a dramatic reenactment of that block. Like, just all down your timeline. It was truly an incredible moment. Now, what were you going to ask, Matt?
I was going to ask you, when the Suns went up 9 and Devin Booker's having the kind of night that he had, we got to talk about him. Did you think that who did you think was going to win that game? Like, at what point did you think the Bucks were going to win that game?
I'm going to be completely honest. I had this sneaking suspicion that Booker, with picking up that fifth foul and having to sit, I thought he was going to be a little cold coming back in.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. Like he didn't have the mojo anymore. I mean, he was on fire. What he had, what was an 18-point third quarter, is now the NBA's leader in most total points scored, in a first players ever, playoff appearance, ahead of now, I think Rick Barry and Julius Erving are the other two guys on the list, numbers 1 and 2 and 3, I apologize, respectively, on that list for total points scored. But it was the fouls on Booker. Like, the fifth foul was so bad. And then the foul that didn't get called, which, yeah. I mean, had the Suns won this game, it would have been anarchy. And I think one thing we can agree on is the officiating in this game was awful. On both sides, it was really inconsistent. I mean, I felt like Giannis was getting a lot of just touch fouls, pretty much getting sent to the line constantly this game, and then, or at least picking up fouls in this game, because there were plenty of times where he passed off or didn't actually go up for a shot, so didn't translate to free throws. And then Middleton gets hammered left, right, and center, can't buy a free throw. He should have finished with double the amount of free throws he had in this game personally. So, but yeah, I when the Suns were up 9, I thought it was kind of like all she wrote. And then the Bucks pulled out a really, really gritty win.
So it was interesting. I thought here's what's funny. I thought the Bucks got a really good whistle until the Devin Booker foul that they didn't call. Like, the fact that Booker was in foul trouble says something in and of itself. Like, Crowder had 5. He picked up a lot.
I think Giannis got a good whistle. Like, I feel like I want to say Giannis got a good whistle, not the Bucks as a team getting a good whistle, if that's
stance to take. They had 29 free throws, 10 more than the Suns. Now, I think that's okay, given that the Bucks play inside so much and have Giannis and put this amount of pressure on the interior. I think it's fine. But they did actually get to the line. It wasn't like game one where they didn't shoot any free throws for like the first 3 quarters. I thought that they got a good whistle until the late in that game, and then it turned tough. Middleton, I will agree that even with him going to the line for 8 times, which is as many as Giannis got, I still thought mid continues to get a pretty rough whistle in the series.
Well, we're going to go ahead and dub our Michelob Ultra moment from this game. And how could it be anything other? I mean, basically, this entire first segment has almost been our endorsement of this incredible moment. Whether the Bucks go on to win the title or not, I mean, we're going to look back at this block as an all-timer for sure. And this is the first time, Matt, I think, since we started hosting Locked on NBA Thursday, that you and I are agreeing on a Michelob Ultra moment, correct?
Oh, there's no question. We are in lockstep here. We are locked on to the Michelob Ultra moment here, Jackson.
It brought us so much enjoyment, so much happiness, so much excitement to fans on both sides, right? You have people comparing it to the LeBron block. I mean, that's how impressive this block truly was, because at the end of the day, enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. This block truly was a momentous occasion. It basically saved this game. I mean, what more can we say about this? We've gone on and on about it for the entire segment now, but
that was cool. I'll just say this. It was awesome. Like, Giannis flexing after was amazing.
Yeah.
It was cool to see Giannis get that moment, right? Like, he's a 2-time MVP. He went from the lanky kid who like was so amazed by smoothies when he first came into the league, like, all of these things. And now for him to be this competitor at this level, to be 2 wins away now from a championship, and to have that kind of a moment at home in front of that crowd, that to me is just, that is the best parts of sports, is to see athletes that people love get that kind of a moment.
It was incredible for sure. And we've got so many other parts of this game to talk about, but that is your Michelob Ultra moment of this game. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Thursday, talking about this insane Game 4 Finals. Now, which direction are we going here, Matt? Because we can talk about Devin Booker's impressive night. We can talk about Chris Middleton, who deserves his flowers. A 40-point insane performance. 15 of 33 shooting was... The Suns had no answer for the Giannis Middleton pick and roll, the empty out pick and roll that they were running all throughout the evening, and it became so deadly down the stretch in this one. Chris Paul's struggles in this game. Which direction do you want to go now?
I mean, I think we need to key in on how the Bucks won this game, because again, it's insane. So, you know that I like these stats. I've got access to Second Spectrum, which through a friend, he'll send me the data.
Wow, I was about to say, break me off a piece, man.
I'm fortunate to have some people that have access. And so he sent me after the game what the actual numbers looked like for expected field goal percentage versus actual effective field goal percentage for these two teams. The Suns in this game should have shot had an effective field goal percentage of 47% based off of where they shot from and how close the defenders were and how tight the contest was. That's like average. So the Suns are a pretty good shooting team. That's 47%. Let's bump it up to like 51. That's a pretty reasonable bump, 4% over. They shot 55.7%. The Bucks should have had an effective field goal percentage of 51.57, and they shot 43.81. Like, the differences here are massive. The Suns shot better than expected. The Bucks shot notably worse. And because the Bucks had, get this number, Jackson, they had 19 more shots than the Suns. 19 more off of 17 offensive rebounds combined with the turnovers.
Can I just point out all the teams that didn't jump at the chance to trade for PJ Tucker are kicking themselves right now. PJ Tucker plays winning basketball. You look at his stat line and you see the 0 points, one assist, one steal, five boards. Three of them were offensive. And you know what happened is because the Suns try to stick a guard on PJ Tucker, right? Tuck away Chris Paul or Campaign or whoever on PJ Tucker, you know, off in the corner. PJ can come in from that baseline and crash the offensive glass hard. And he's been doing that for years. How did Devin Booker pick up his fifth foul? He shoulder checked the hell out of PJ Tucker because Tucker was crashing in for an offensive board from the baseline. PJ Tucker makes winning basketball plays. And just as a team, I mean, the Bucks coming away with 17 offensive rebounds in this one, coming away with 19 second chance points, and then we haven't even gotten to the turnovers they were forcing defensively. This was a masterclass defensive performance from the Bucks, where they really dug in. And I mean, you already highlighted the offensive numbers for them and how bad they looked at the jump, and there's a reason they won this game, and it was because of their defense. 17 forced turnovers to the tune of 24 Bucks points.
So a lot of this is kind of important to keep in mind. When you look at offensive rebounds and you look at turnovers, I stress on this a lot during the season over on Locked On Nuggets and everywhere else I podcast on the Action Network pod as well. If you give up a high number of offensive rebounds, but at the end of the game, you have less than 1 point given up on second chance points for those offensive rebounds, it's fine. It's really okay. If you have turnovers, not 17, but if you have turnovers and you at the end of the game have less than 1 point per turnover, again, you're doing fine. You can do those things and get away with it as long as your defense is hanging in there. The Bucks made them pay. So the half court offense couldn't do anything, but they generated 24 points, the Bucks did, off of 17 Suns turnovers. When you have numbers like that, when you're converting those numbers, you're taking one of the few weaknesses of the Suns. And really, the Suns don't turn the ball over that much. Like the work Drew Holiday has done on Chris Paul. Like my friend Jared Dubin from 538 asked this question in a Slack tonight, and I thought it was really good. Has anybody had a wider differential between the defensive and offensive side in a playoff series than Drew Holiday? Because the work that he's doing defensively is incredible. It's top tier elite stuff. He is bothering the point guard and wearing him down. But it's taking so much out of Jrue Holiday. He can't make layups. He can't make jumpers. He can't make anything. And it's painful. But all of this kind of combines where if, when you're able to look at that, those 24 points on 17 turnovers that the Bucks were able to create, Jrue Holiday had a hand in that. Like, that's where his value was found in this game, even if he had a bad game, and he did. Like, a lot of people had a bad game in this game. Chris Paul had a bad game in this game. Most people had a bet. This was actually a pretty ugly game, highlighted by the Bucks once again having brute offense and Devin Booker having an all-time performance that ultimately was wasted in the loss.
And some really key plays from like the guys who were highlighting as, okay, these guys had some bad games, right? But like you come up with like the Pat Connaughton three-pointer, right? His rebounds in this game, 9 rebounds for Pat Connaughton, and an incredible rebounding guard. Despite the fact that he had some, questionable shots early in this one, right? He had an air ball early, I think, right?
Yep.
It was just a really polarizing game, right? Just in all facets, like, man. And then you come back to the point guard and the defense that Jrue Holiday played on him. And things did not look good for Chris Paul in this game. He was frustrated. He was flustered. He wasn't himself. I want to say it wasn't 3 first quarter turnovers. He had 2 turnovers early for sure, like within the first like 6 minutes of the game that were very uncharacteristic Chris Paul turnovers. And that kind of like, I don't want to say it set the tone for the night, but the Bucks set the tone early from how they were going to defend him. And I just don't think he ever got into a rhythm in this game.
So here's what's kind of interesting is, all right, so Paul had 2 turnovers early in the first quarter and he had 2 turnovers in the fourth quarter and he only had 1 in quarters 2 and 3. So that bad start and a bad finish, obviously, on that late one where he just lost the ball and fell down.
Noting that over these last 3 games, I believe that he's amounted 15 turnovers, mm-hmm. which is the most in a 3-game stretch for Chris Paul dating all the way back to 2012. So yeah, not a great stretch of games for Chris Paul as far as ball security is concerned.
Yeah, I saw Kevin Pelton note that on Twitter. I think one of the things I think is interesting is I personally, like, there's just a lot of, like, crushing Chris Paul tonight, which I get. He had a bad game. It just kind of wild to me because it's like, from a betting perspective, like, Devin Booker's now the odds-on favorite to win Finals MVP, and that's wild to me. Like, Chris Paul led the Suns in scoring coming into this game. He led them in scoring and assists coming into this game. And so for me, I'm just like, yeah, Chris Paul had a bad game. Like, Chris Paul was going to have a bad game sometime in the series. He's not a player that's going to be stellar absolutely every night. He's 36. He's 36 with 1 meniscus. Like, he's not going to be awesome every single night, and they definitely wore him down. I think Jrue Holiday's defense was good. I also just think Chris had a bad game, which is why, like, you need Devin Booker's game to raise them above, and it didn't. And, and the offensive rebounding, I think, was a large part of that. So, like, this was a costly one. I believe we talked after game 2. I felt like game 2 was a game that the Bucks should have won. And
you were heavy on the Bucks in game 2. You were heavy on the Bucks game 2 and 3.
Yeah. And the Bucks, I felt like they should have won that one. I got to tell you, as amazing as this game was, and it was, I still kind of feel like this is one that the Suns let get away. Like, the Bucks earned it. Chris Middleton was amazing down the stretch. Chris Paul made the mistakes, the Giannis block. Like, the Bucks made the plays. But even with the shot variance and everything else, the Bucks shot so poorly and had such a hard time generating offense that I kind of go back and I'm still like, I still think the Suns are okay in the series. Like, I do think Chris Paul will play better. I do think Booker will be somewhere between game 4's thermonuclear explosion and game 3's very pitiful performance. Somewhere in the middle is Devin Booker. And I do kind of think that with the, especially going back to Phoenix, I think that the Suns are okay. The Bucks are, I think it's going to be a long series. It's going to be a good series, but I do kind of don't want to overreact to this one in terms of swinging it forward in the series.
It's down to a best of 3 now with the Suns holding home court advantage. 2 more games, potentially 2 more games in Phoenix, games 5 and 6, or 5 and 7, I should say, of course, and then game 6 back in Milwaukee. But we're going to give final thoughts on this one coming up in just a moment after a quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com. Because look, why on earth would you want to spend up to 30 or 50 or even 100% more for the exact same auto parts at like your traditional like chain store when you can just go to rockauto.com, find all the parts you need for your car or truck. Their website, super easy to navigate. Go there, check out their catalog. They've got everything. They've got, you know, brake lights. They've got motor oil, brand new carpet. You name it, they've got it on their website. So go check them out. Visit rockauto.com. And be sure when you're checking out, be sure to write in their little how did you hear about us box. Say that Locked On sent you so that they know that we sent you over there. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com.
Today's episode of Locked On NBA is also brought to you by Bet Online, the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season's in full swing, and you can track all the action at Bet Online. Get all the latest news, odds, and info for all your sporting needs, including MLB, NBA, NHL, and all your UFC and MMA action. Before the next pitch, head over to Bet Online on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news, sign-up bonuses, and contest information. Or you could have bet on the under like I did. And you could have bet on the Suns plus 4.5, which was a painful loss, Jackson. Head to the website or use your mobile device using promo code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. That's a really good bonus. Bet Online, your online sports book experts. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA.
And final segment here at Locked On NBA Thursday. Reminder that on our road to the finals, which, hey, the finals are here, it's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, only 2.6 carbs, 95 calories. We can all enjoy the games a little bit more this season. Now, Matt, we were kind of talking about the fact that, you know, you still thought the Suns had a, you know, were kind of in control of this one. And I want to say, I really think the Bucks, like, especially at the top of the fourth, they needed to run things more through Giannis and Chris, and they just didn't. Like, the number of possessions that they had that were going through other guys or finishing with shots from, again, like Connaughton or Holiday or just whoever, I don't know why they get away from the offense that clearly works so well from them at times throughout this game. Do you have an explanation for that?
I don't.
It can't be as simple as like you want to get other guys involved, but it's just like there were, and this happened throughout the game. Is I feel like Giannis had times where he was calling for the ball and wasn't getting it from his teammates, and that just can't happen for a two-time MVP caliber player.
Yeah. So part of it, they wanted to. So the idea was to attack Booker. That was a lot of it. If the Suns are going to switch everything, the Bucks,
which
decided,
Drew Holiday did a pitiful job of trying to use his size offensively against Booker and Paul and Payne. I mean, so many times just it was like watching a 90s big like pounded away in the post and then just to get to the front of the rim and then like whiff a layup.
Yeah, but that's how they drew the five fouls on Booker. So, like, this is part of it is, you know, you want Holiday to be more efficient. You have confidence he's going to make things like layups. He's going to make something. You have confidence that Drew Holiday is going to shoot better than 4 of 20. Shout out Colorado. But like, I just don't think that, like, in general, you're going to be able to, like, I think it's still a losing proposition because Booker has length on him and Booker's defending well. He's playing really hard, but did get him, and that was part of why he got in foul trouble. They did contribute to it. I do think that they got a little too devoted to it. And I think part of it, though, Giannis it's really crazy watching Giannis in the series because he vacillates wildly from, is he going to pass out? He looks exhausted. And then swinging the other way too. He has stretches where it's like Giannis just dunked 5 times in the span of like 30 seconds and completely demolished the Suns. And a lot of it's when Ayton sits, but not all of it. You know, there was a lot of criticism for Bud through the years of not playing Giannis more minutes. It's like, why are you not playing Giannis? All this stuff, blah, blah, blah. Giannis's conditioning is amazing.
It takes a lot to play the way he does.
He's a high performance engine that's not meant to go on a long road trip.
His right trigger is always down.
Exactly. Like, you do not, Giannis is not the vehicle that you're taking on the family drive from Kansas City to LA. Okay. He's not even really the muscle car. He's more like some sort of just sci-fi vehicle
We're treading dangerously close to a Fast 9, like, family joke reference. Please, let's get away from here before we say
that. But this is part of it. I do think he tends to overheat. So I think part of that is they're trying to take some of the pressure off of him. I do wonder if in game 5, they'll go back to that weapon. They'll try and really attack. I think it's going to be tough. I think they're probably, there's a lot of things. I'm going to like the Suns quite a bit in game 5. I'm just telling you right now.
I think that, you know, in this case, we talked about this after game 2, I believe. And, or before game 2, I'm losing track. Time is an illusion. It's okay. But you know, your premise was that they needed to attack Ayton. And I do want to say that I think Ayton, for, you know, all intents and purposes, did a pretty phenomenal, I can't say phenomenal, but held his own against Giannis, right? Like,
he did,
you know, squaring up his body, not committing the fouls, right? You know, putting, kind of planting that wall. He had that one call earlier, right? And this was my thing about, like, the officiating, right? Is, like, Giannis had that drive where he literally, Ayton was planted, arms, like, down, like, makes the wall, and Giannis just, like, bulldozes into him and gets the foul call. And it's like, what is this? Like, if that's a foul, then Giannis is truly, like, unguardable. Like, what else can you do if you're DeAndre Ayton, who, again, I think he deserves a lot of credit for holding his own against Giannis?
Yeah, I think a lot of it, honestly, is they need to involve him more. So this is kind of the danger. The easy narrative of this game is like, oh, man, the Suns let Devin Booker down. Like, amazing performance from Devin Booker, and his Suns teammates did not pick him up. I think it's accurate to say that about Chris Paul, because Chris Paul played terribly. I do think that the Suns are at their best when they're sharing the ball and getting everyone involved, and you're getting hit with Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and Cam Payne and Jay Crowder and DeAndre Ayton, and everyone's getting involved. And when Booker went on that long stretch in the third quarter, it was basically just Booker's going to do some stuff. And it kind of got the Suns away from their offense. And you can say that they needed it, except that they were generating pretty good offense in the first half. Not great, not elite. And you're going to have these times when Booker does it, but this is one of the kind of complicated mechanisms. I think Booker's a fantastic passer, but the Bucks are playing such good defense. Like, this is a big part of it. Booker's facing such tough defense, he has to go into shot mechanics because he doesn't have time to make reads, because he will get the ball deflected, knocked out of his hand, or stolen, because the Bucks are that good defensively. So he can get to his shot mechanics when he's feeling it, like tonight, versus in game 3 when he was not. And he can do stuff like tonight. But the problem is, like, then when he, in the fourth quarter, especially when he was sitting with foul trouble, you needed everybody else to be able to just ramp back up. And that's difficult. You need to stay in rhythm. Like, there's a cost to going one dude heavy. And this has been the story in the NBA forever, is that there is a cost of one dude going supernova. It's one of the reasons the Warriors were so successful, because Curry's ability to light things up always came in the flow of an offense. And even then, Steph always kind of struggled in the finals. So there's a lot to kind of unpack here, but I think the key element is they need to get Ayton more involved in.
It's almost like the supernova came one quarter too soon.
Yeah.
Like, had the supernova happened in the fourth, we'd be talking a completely different story right now. But it happened in the third. Then he had I really think that, you know, Booker deserves some criticism, and it's to be expected, right? I mean, he's still a young guy, right? He plays beyond his years, but it was a boneheaded foul to shoulder check, you know, PJ Tucker out of bounds for your fifth.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry. Oh. And then the fact that he didn't, you know, he should have fouled out of the game with the foul on Drew Holiday. So, I mean, that's an entirely different story, but still a pair of very bad decisions defensively. Like, you have to know your worth if you're Devin Booker to realize you are more important than saving 2 points on the fast break from Drew Holiday.
Yeah.
Or saving an offensive rebound and potentially a putback or even a kick out for a 3-pointer from PJ Tucker.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it was a tough whistle. Like I said, for much of the game, like, that the missed call could have cost the Bucks literally the series and the title. But in general, I feel like the Bucks got a pretty good whistle in Milwaukee. We'll see what happens when it goes back to Phoenix. Like, that's going to be this is a lot of this game and this series is the foul calls. It has to be, because the Bucks are so physical inside. The Suns are trying to beat them with technique and skill, and the Bucks are going to try and beat them with size and physicality.
And the Suns were also a little physical in that first half. Like, I mean, mm-hmm. they were getting away with a fair amount of contact in the first half defensively.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, these are two excellent defensive teams. Like, these are just excellent defensive teams. You know, the Bucks shot 40% and won. The Suns shot 51% and lost, but they did shoot 30% from three. Here's another, like, really big stat for you, okay? This one is huge in terms of how this series is going, because if we still continue to look at it and go, like, well, but the Bucks just don't shoot well, and they just can't shoot, and that's a problem. In game one of this series, the Suns shot 34 threes. In game two, they shot 40. In game three, they shot 31. Just 23 attempts from three tonight. Like, you can't, if the Bucks are going to beat you inside, you can't be surrendering the 3-point line either. Like, that's got to be where you make
you need an brand. Advantage somewhere.
Yeah. And it's not just the attempts and how many you make, it's not just the makes and how many you make and the percentage. It's the attempts. If you're the Suns, you got to be getting up like 30, 31 shots. They came into this game and they said this, like Monty Williams said, we want to increase the pace. We want to try and get them going. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I'm going to bet that this game was pretty slow. And a lot of that just has to do with both teams are just, there is such tough defense being played in this series. It is a
95.1.
Yep. That's slower than the average pace of the series. So a complete whiff there on the game plan by Monty Williams. Again, kind of expect things to change when it goes back to Phoenix.
So I got a couple more things before we wrap this one up, Matt. Now, first, I kind of posited the question to you in one of our recent episodes about how do these two teams stack up to, you know, the past like decade of champions, right? And we did a fun little, you know, thought exercise there. But is this the most like evenly matched finals that we've had in a minute? I feel like both of these teams are very like, they're right there next to each other. It doesn't feel like one team is clearly superior to the other. And I feel like it's been a while since we've had at least four or five years, maybe six, like going back to can't be, it's gotta,
yeah,
be.
Here's the thing. So, like Warriors,
tough, right?
Warriors, Cavs went seven games down to the wire. But if you remember, not many games in that series were close.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of discussion. I feel a radio call today from folks that were like, hasn't been a great series, you know, like double digit. I'm like, it's been close for three quarters. And then one team has managed to pull away. The series feels very close. It feels very, very knife's edge in every single game. It feels like in the third quarter, there's a turning point. And tonight it was in the fourth, honestly.
This game four felt like a game seven. Like,
yeah.
It had that intensity to it.
Mm-hmm. Going back, I mean, I think you got to go back. I think honestly, I wouldn't even say 2016. I would go back to probably 2013 with Heat Spurs is the last time that I've felt like a series was this close. That series had blowouts, but it did feel like every game was very high intensity. Every game took maximum focus and intensity, and it did feel like there's no way this series isn't going long. Like there's just no way, which is why tonight was massive because the Suns had a genuine opportunity to really kind of end the series tonight. If they got in the Devin Booker game and despite all the offensive rebounds and everything else had just shot their way to a win, that's probably it. You know, the Bucks would have to win three straight, but now it's best of three. You know, after game two, it was, can the Bucks really beat the Suns four out of five times? Mm-hmm. Now they just got to beat them two out of three, which they just beat them twice. So it's remarkable how the series has changed. It's good to see it. I'm hopeful I want this one to get to a seven. That we deserve a game seven after how rotten the season has been on so many levels. So I'm enjoying it. It's been a blast. Lots of big moments. The basketball has been really high level. For all the shooting problems, it's been really high level basketball.
You and I both had Suns in six going into the series. Has that, I mean, I know you just said you want a game seven, but has this performance from the Bucks changed your opinion of what they're capable of in the series, or do you just want it to go to a game seven, like selfishly?
So I wrote over at Action that like I felt like the Bucks were really alive after game three, not just because they won that game, but because of, if you looked at the overall flow of the series, like it was going into this game, it was 114.3 offensive rating for the Suns to 114.0. for the Bucks. It was a 0.3 differential in their net rating in their net rating. And so it just seemed like there was a lot of things that were promising for the Bucks. But the problem is there's a lot of scenarios here that come out well for the Suns too. Like I love them in game five. They're going to make adjustments. They're going to actually push the pace. They'll get a better whistle. I think the Suns win game five. game six, I think, is honestly a coin flip, and then all game sevens are coin flips. I think the Suns win game five, and then from there on out, it's a coin flip. Because
I think the Suns lose whichever game Scott Foster referees.
Probably. You would think, the man, that's such a big... If you're the Suns, you just have to pray that that's six.
Because if, right? If it's six, then you only get one more Scott Foster game. But if it's game five, you bet if it goes seven, he's showing up in game seven, and he's going to be in his bag.
Man.
My good old friend Scott Foster. Oh, God.
What I'm worried about is that he doesn't ref game five and doesn't ref game six. And then we all know, like, we just know for certain the game seven is going to be the Scott Foster game.
He's going to come walking out like a WWE wrestler. Just that's his entrance into game seven.
Oh, God. That's Scott Foster's music.
Oh, man. What a way to end the show. Matt, this was a good one. Such a great game. Any parting remarks before we shut this one down?
There's a lot of commentary about, like, I was asked today about, like, how come people aren't, you know, because the ratings aren't going to be great, and that's okay. If you're an NBA fan, don't care about that. This series has been awesome. Okay, it's two likable teams that play hard, that are competing at a very high level. The defense is amazing. We don't have to have constant splashing. We don't have to have unstoppable all-time forces of nature like LeBron. This is two great fan bases with two great teams battling on every single possession. We're getting great basketball. Whoever wins the series will absolutely deserve it. No asterisk needed. Phenomenal series.
Reminder, starting July 19th, we've got our Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from the GOAT of NBA mock drafts, Chad Ford himself, as well as all the different Locked On hosts. So if you care about what I have to say about the Rockets' number two overall pick, be sure to check that out, as well as all the other different hosts who have their mock picks and all that good stuff. Odyssey is your home for all the sports podcasts, music, and news that matters to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A. A-C-Y. Now for today's episode, that is going to do it. As always, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching on the brand new YouTube channel. If you haven't gone and hit subscribe yet on our brand new Locked On NBA YouTube channel, please do that. But for me, you can follow me on Twitter at JT Gatlin. Matt, where can they follow you at?
Follow me at HP Basketball and check out the Action Network app.
All right, that's going to do it. Again, thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. That's going to be it for Locked On NBA Thursday, and we look forward to having you back again at Locked On NBA Thursday.